The E-Commerce School Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. I found in my studies of hundreds of e-commerce stores that operational efficiency is far more important than almost anything else in terms of determining your success. And that's why you should take a look at Fulfill. It's the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and, most importantly, profitably scale your 8- and 9-figure brand. It does that through helping you identify operational bottlenecks that you can solve, providing better forecasting and supply chain planning and PO management, and also leveraging their powerful warehouse management system, which results in fewer mispicks for better customer experience. They're the highest rated ERP in our community, not NetSuite, not Scubana or Odoo, but Fulfill. So start focusing on growing profitably and check them out at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff for their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells. You can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And I was on Twitter, as I tend to be sometimes, getting sucked in, likely distracted from something I should be doing. And someone kept popping up in my Twitter feed with just interesting takes, interesting ad examples and creative, and someone who just seemed like she knew a tremendous amount about TikTok and short form video. Reached out and she generously agreed to be on the podcast. And that woman is Savannah Sanchez. She is the founder of thesocialsavannah.com, where she helps top e-commerce brands elevate their business with amazing creative on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. She's an official TikTok agency partner, as well as the creator of the number one TikTok course online. Definitely credentials I am about as far from as they come. And so wanted to have her on to talk about all things short form, TikTok, how you create good engaging creative, the creative testing process, kind of the lay of the land in terms of all the short form formats that are out there and platforms for it, and just kind of geek out in general about this. So Savannah, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here.
Yeah. We got to start out, it's died down a little bit, but when you are your agency, I know you do all three platforms, but I think TikTok is probably what you focus the most on. When you hear like the US Congress is thinking about banning TikTok or potential forcing a sale, like was that one of the more notable days in your business history? Like how do you process something like that? And is it something I was going to ask you if you're worried about it, but yeah, like how do you think about that given that's up in the air for something you focus on so deeply?
You know, I wasn't very stressed. A lot of my TikTok reps reached out and had very polished comms about TikTok's official stance that it's nothing to worry about. Everything's fine. And I think part of it, as I'm so deep in the client work sometimes that I'm just dealing with all the tasks of the day, that I don't have time to necessarily worry about TikTok getting banned. So I was just focused on my work and it seemed to kind of blow over. Like I don't really see people talking about it as much as they were even a couple of weeks ago. So in my mind, I'm hoping that the worst is done and it's going to blow over.
Yeah, I saw that. And like I really felt when that news came out for people in your shoes with, you built spent years building an agency. People who spent years building up their TikTok following, like a question of whether you should ban or not, like it would just be, I was feeling, well, not for you specifically, but the whole industry when that came out. So I'd love to tell me a little bit, if you could, about, and I mentioned this before we got on, I think there's a lot of people listening. There are definitely some people who are utilizing short form, whether on TikTok or other places, really well for video. Most people listening are e-commerce entrepreneurs. A good percentage of them have a meaningful business up and running. And I would say the majority of them have not committed to creating short form video content. I think partially because maybe it's harder to adapt new strategies as you've been in business for a while, maybe because it takes a seeming amount of time to kind of get up and running. I think largely probably because a lot of people also aren't just comfortable with the medium or feel like they don't have something interesting to say. And it's been a while. It's been, you know, 3+ years now that it's been fairly mainstream. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. That's the perspective I'm kind of coming to this from. I think a lot of people listening are probably coming to this from. What could you say on where TikTok is now, 3-4 years in? It's definitely mainstream. Where, like, is it still the land of like milk and honey where you can go and get incredible views and organic reach? Is that really starting to get ratcheted back? How do you describe the TikTok opportunity circa, mid 2023?
For sure. I would say it's every year that goes by, it gets more and more difficult to get organic reach on TikTok. Similar to Instagram back in the day, it used to be really easy to get followers, then it starts dying off and you start having to pay for it. If I was an e-commerce brand owner, I would really focus on the ad side. That's something that I get a lot of questions about is, if I want to start advertising on TikTok, do I need an organic profile? Do I need followers? Do I need to start building that out first? While it's always a good idea to have an organic presence on TikTok, to your point, it takes a long time. You have to be following the trends. Maybe you need to hire some 18-year-old interns to come up with the TikToks for you. So a lot of brands are going that route of hiring college interns to take over their TikTok. So I would say, but if I had limited resources, limited time, I wouldn't even worry about organic TikTok. I would really just focus on creating good TikTok ad content. Because if you plan to run ads on TikTok, you don't need to connect it to your organic profile. So essentially, if someone sees an ad, they can't even click to get to your organic profile from the ad. The only action they can do is scroll away or go to your website. So that would be my first thing that I would tackle, great ad creatives. And then as I start getting more accustomed to TikTok and the trends and I want to take on that challenge, then I would focus on building out the organic profile. But it's definitely not necessary for success to have an organic presence if you want to do TikTok ads.
Do you think people just grossly overthink it in terms of how difficult it, like when you think about, obviously TikTok in short form kind of favors less produced and polished video, but what do you need? Like, is it really as simple as somebody firing up their phone, starting to record stuff? What's the level of, what do you really try to get right in the video? Because obviously you got to walk that line. We've all seen horrific looking short form, but also there's a sense that the candid kind of the spontaneous, the non-professional shot works better. So how do you kind of think about creating ad videos that work really well, kind of walking that line?
Sure. It's funny you ask that because on my team, I work with creators and editors to make video ads each week. And it's always the ones that we spend the least amount of time producing. Like we film it in 5 minutes, we throw it together, and that's always the best performing ad. And it happens over and over and over again. But the ad that we spent weeks concepting, going back and forth, client, polishing, editing, complete flop. So I always tell my creators, like, don't overthink it. And I try to remind them, like, hey, remember when you did this one that took 5 minutes and it was rushed and that ended up being the best? Sometimes it's best just to get the content out there and to keep the ideas flowing. Don't put too much pressure on yourself that every ad is going to be a winner, because it's not. I think it's just about having a repeatable process of making new creatives, having a hypothesis of what you want to test is very important, but not being too concerned about the outcome. Ultimately, I'm just looking to collect data and try to learn from that data to inform future weeks of ad creatives. But if I attach myself too much to the outcome of, oh, this needs to be the best performing ad, this needs to go viral, that's usually when I overthink it. So sticking more to the process and not thinking about the outcome is my advice.
I'd love to dive into that. What's your process look like? You talked about very systematic process to create. I'm guessing you're just trying to put as much out there as possible, get data on it, and then, you know, kind of course adjust. What's your process or your team's process look like for, you know, going through the whole thing to getting an ad out the door, the creative process, so to speak, for you?
Sure. So the most important thing that I find when creating a new ad for a client, and we create usually on average 2 new ads for each client each week, is finding good hooks to test. So I usually just spend time scrolling through Instagram, TikTok, Facebook ads library. TikTok ads library is a really great place to do research and essentially write down hooks that I think are eye-catching, that are scroll-stopping. That's another thing with ad creatives. You don't always have to reinvent the wheel. Going to your competitor's ads library and taking some of their hooks and reworking them a bit is a great place to start. So my first step is coming up or finding on online two hooks that I want to test, because the hook is the most important part.
Jumping really quick. So every single ad that gets published publicly available in a searchable library via TikTok's ad library? How does that work?
So Facebook, yes. Any advertiser has to publicly share their ads in the Facebook ad library. On TikTok, you do have the option to opt out. So in Ads Manager, when you're launching your ad, there's a little checkbox before you launch that says, I allow this to be published in the TikTok ads library. It is auto-checked. So most people just rushing, building ads as we do, we'll keep that checked. I personally uncheck it because I don't want people stealing my ad ideas, which is hypocritical because I just said, go and steal other people's ad ideas. But I'm like, don't steal mine.
I don't think it's hypocritical. This is just a classic example of people who pay attention to detail, like come on top, right?
For sure. And it's funny because I will see brands that take my ads and will use the exact same script, the exact same shot list. They just recreate it to a T. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing now. They're not taking their own spin on it. They just literally will recreate the exact ad, which I think is funny.
All right, sorry. So I derailed you there. So first step, focusing on the hook. I think most people know, of course, the hook is the most important. How what is it like? Do you have 3 seconds? What's the amount of time that you can work a hook into? Like if you have a great hook, but it takes 5 or 6 or 7 seconds to set up, too long, what's your window there?
I think 3 seconds is the key to get your main message across. That's when someone's going to decide if they're going to keep watching or not. So in that first 3 seconds, we'll throw the hook out there. So for instance, if we're doing makeup, we'll say like, my boyfriend commented that I looked younger, and that'll be the hook. And then we go into, I was unhappy with my skin and I saw this ad on TikTok, so I decided to buy it. So then going into that problem solution story, but it's about getting that intriguing first line of like, oh, why did the boyfriend say she looked younger? And so testing different hooks is what I find is the most effective use of time. And that's where we'll track to see, okay, this hook worked well, this hook didn't, and then test the hooks that perform well for other clients too. So a lot of it does revolve around finding a good hook, because the middle and the end of the ad is pretty much the same. It's always problem solution, CTA. But the hook, I think, is where you can get creative and stand out from the rest of the ads on TikTok and Facebook.
I'm going to ask you away a little bit of your secret sauce here, at least some of your favorite ones. But what are a couple of hooks that you've been like, that have performed especially well for you, or that you've been impressed by that you've seen recently?
Sure. So one that's working really well, and I say this and I instantly regret it as I say it, because I've already seen a ton of brands copy this in the last few weeks since we've launched them, is 3 reasons why I regret buying X. So, but then all the reasons you mention are actually positives. So I work with a brand called BlendJet, and we did 3 reasons why I regret buying my BlendJet. Number one, it was so hard to choose a color. There were so many options. Number two, I get compliments everywhere I go. Number three, I save so much money on smoothies. Guess I'm rich now. So I think having the negative hook does get people's attention and also gets people in the comments that are criticizing that the 3 reasons aren't negative. But any engagement is good engagement when it comes to ads. And that's something that we started repeating across all of our other clients, is this negative 3 reasons why. And we're seeing it work well across the board. So we're going to continue to do 3 reasons why I regret buying X and different variations of it until it stops working.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, appreciate it. And I know obviously the incentives kind of keep it close to the chest. How do you think about, like when I think about that, how are you tracking from acquisition to see what works really well? Because you got 2 elements, right? You've got the brand awareness element that you can build up over time, and then you have the actual acquisition. And oftentimes it's not this just linear path that people follow. But how are you tracking, like, what is success? What's your kind of North Star for success? Is it watch time in general? Are you actually tracking individual TikToks or people that watch them into, like, you know, all the way down the funnel to purchase in Shopify? How are you thinking about what you optimize for? Because I could see, for example, like, the ad you just mentioned working really well to get that hook and have people watch for a little bit, But then also, like you said, like people being like, oh, seriously, like really, these are the regrets that your life is amazing and you're rich and wealthy and nutritious. Like, and then they either, even if they don't bounce or watch through it, maybe they, you know, you have some, there's a little bit of affinity lost towards a brand. I actually thought about this recently. The last podcast I did, or in the last couple of weeks, I went through a funnel to buy something, bought a tiny little, I mean, the thing was super small and it was expensive and they charged me like $12 for shipping. And I went through and I bought it, but it left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth with the brand, just from a brand equity standpoint. Anyway, that's kind of neither here nor there, but what are you optimizing for and how do you track attribution for all these ads?
Sure. Such great questions. I would say just tackling the brand affinity side, I'm always the one that wants to push the envelope a bit and the brand has to come back and say, okay, let's not go that far. For instance, for this BlendJet, three reasons why I regret buying a BlendJet. We were like, what if we did three reasons why buying a BlendJet is like lighting money on fire. And we were thinking about like lighting money on fire. And they're like, okay, let's not take it that far. Like, we don't want to be too negative. But I think that things that are more extreme do catch more attention. And so I'm always going to be the one that pushes for something a bit more extreme just because I know they work so well. And I find that my brands that don't care about brand affinity or their brand equity as much, they actually do see more success on TikTok because they're not afraid of taking more risks, being a bit more wild. So there is a fine line. I think there'll always be that battle between agency and client of the agency wanting to do something that's not on brand. But I would say with TikTok being so short form and so fast paced that brands are more willing to take more risks on that platform. I think on Facebook, they feel like it's more permanent. But for some reason on TikTok, especially with bigger brands, we see it on organic TikTok all the time. They come out with some weirder stuff just because they know that its lifespan is going to be a lot shorter on TikTok.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How are you doing thinking about attribution for all these things?
Sure. So I think a lot of people overcomplicate attribution and metrics. From my stance, I always look at which ads are scaling the most, like going to Ads Manager, sorting by amount spend. The ones that are spending the most are your top ads. And then I'm taking the spend in relation to CPA and ROAS. Of course, if an ad's spending a ton that has a really high CPA, that's not a good thing. But I want the highest spending ads at our target CPA or around our target CPA. I think a lot of marketers get caught up in watching watch time, CTR, CPC, and thumb stop ratio is another one I see a lot on Twitter.
But what's thumb stop ratio? I'm not familiar with that.
Thumb stop ratio, I believe, is the amount of people who watch the first 3 seconds of the ad. Maybe someone will need to correct me in the comments, but that's how much I don't pay attention to these metrics. But I see people throw around these terms all the time. It's like hook rate, thumb stop ratio, and they sound really nice from a marketing perspective. But ultimately, as an e-commerce brand owner, or as an agency, what are we looking at? Can these ads scale? Are they at our target CPA? And all of these metrics like CTR and CPC and watch time, they don't have a positive correlation with ROAS or negative correlation with CPA. So even
apologies for interrupting, but there's no correlation between watch time and CPA. That really surprises me.
There is no correlation. And that's something that I did a lot of research on when I was at Common Thread. I did this whole research article piece for sumo.com that was essentially debunking that CPC is an important metric and same with CTR. I essentially took all of the ad accounts that we had access to at Common Thread, mapped out their ROAS versus their CTR and CPC, and there was no correlation. So even the ads with a high CTR didn't have the highest ROAS. So I think that's something that when I did that research, I now keep that in the back of my mind that even if an ad has a good click-through rate, a good watch time, ultimately, what's the metric you care about? The money in your wallet at the end of the month. So how much can you scale on it? Is it at my target CPA? Keeping it simple and not letting these other metrics distract you, because the worst thing a marketer can do is turn off an ad because they say, oh, it has a bad watch time or it has a low CTR. But if it's getting spend and it's at your target CPA, like who cares at the end of the day if it has a low watch time or a low CTR? Clearly it has a high conversion rate. So why do the other metrics really matter?
And so are you doing reporting, all of the CPA reporting within TikTok itself to kind of to give you the, hey, this ad's doing great for a CPA perspective or not?
Yeah. So I just go into Ads Manager. I sort by amount spend. So I want to see the ads I've spent the most. And then I'll make sure that the CPA is in range. I'll usually have like a $20 CPA range that I keep it in. Like for instance, I have one client, their target CPA is a 50. But if I see that it's spending a lot and it's at 70, then I'll let it run for a little more because I do have to trust that if the TikTok algorithm is giving this ad spend and it's preferring it over the other ads in the ad set, TikTok has some signal that this ad has potential. And especially if I've only let it run for a couple of days, even if the CPA is above our target by $20, because it's getting the most spend, that's a signal to me to keep it on and see if it'll optimize over time.
Interesting. So I'm guessing you do that because you've seen that happen a number of times where, hey, it's unperforming, I'm going to let it run. TikTok is still giving it more juice. So you've probably seen that come down over time. So it's a signal to you that TikTok sees potential there.
It is a good signal. I will never turn off an ad that is getting the most spend or if it's like one of the top three spenders. If it's slightly above our CPA target, I'll usually see it play out over the next couple of weeks that the CPA starts going down. I think that's something that people also make that mistake of is they turn it off so quickly because it's $20 above their target CPA. I will say that in this instance, this client where our target CPA is 50, if it's spending a lot and it's at $100 CPA, so now we're $50 off target, then I'll think to myself, okay, it's going to take a lot to get the CPA down. Do I really think it's going to come down that much over time? Probably not. I think it can come down $20, but probably not 50. So I keep a ratio of if it's way higher than our target CPA, then I'll turn it off. But if we're kind of close in the ballpark, then let it go for another week. There's a reason why TikTok's giving it spend. Let's see if it plays out in a week.
Got it. I got us way off course. Apologies. So back to my question I asked you like 10 minutes ago, and then I led you way off the trail. So creative process first is just getting really good hooks. And I'm sure at this point, like you've got a bunch of just built up knowledge, probably a list of stuff that you can think through and you've got that built up. So starting to do that, if people want to do this themselves, creating that almost like a good copywriter would have a list of great headlines, right? Inspiration for these things. So now that you've got the good hook and you can match that with the brand, what's next in your testing process?
Yes. So the next thing is making sure that you have the right creators to film the ads and good editors to edit the footage. So the way my team works is I have a team of 30 creators who I've trained and work with every single week to create different ads for my clients. They're all women between like 18 and 40. So that's the demographic that my clients are targeting. So after I've trained these creators, I know what to expect from them. I'll identify, okay, for this brief, I think Kaylin is going to be the best person to film this. So I'll give her the script, the shot list, and I'm not expecting her to edit any of the content. I think that's something that is really important in the process is to have the person who's starring in the ad not necessarily be the marketer who's going to edit it or strategize it. These are all different roles. So I'll have the creator get on camera, hold up the product, do the different shots that I need, say the lines that I need. And then I give that to an editor, and I have 10 editors on my team. And essentially, we use very similar styling for every single client. It's all native TikTok text, like the bubble text that we see on TikTok. There's a few different animations, like transition effects that we use for ads. So essentially, once the editor has the footage from the creator, then it's just plugging and playing into our format that we've seen work well. Same animations, same text treatments. So that makes it really easy for the editor. They're just putting together the pieces. And then as the strategist, then you have to look at the end product once the editor sends me the ads to review to make sure, does this make sense? Did the editor use the best shots? Is this clear? Is there any way we can make this more concise? I try to make my ads between 20 and 30 seconds. So a lot of times I'll have to go back and cut it down to its most important elements. And then I ship it off to the client. And then that process repeats for me every single week of coming up with the script, coming up with the hooks that we want to test, giving the directions to the creators, passing on the footage to the editors, and then sending it off to the client.
Wow. And you've got to have, I mean, you mentioned the talent, you mentioned, and this is kind of me taking my TikTok hat off and thinking about like putting on my business process and just like leadership role hat. You have the talent that is the, you know, in front of the camera, you have the editors. Who's writing all the script? You can't be writing all these scripts and hooks yourself, are you? Because that would be an unholy amount of work to do for one person for your client base.
It used to be. Luckily, over the last couple of years, I've been able to hire what I call project managers who essentially help me write out the scripts, give the scripts to the creators, review the footage, give the footage to the editors. So they're essentially moving the project along. And then throughout the week, I'll be sending my project managers inspiration of ads I come across. I'm like, hey, this would be a really great ad for this client, or this is a really great hook for this client. So we all kind of collaborate through the week, sharing ideas. And then we come together. We have this huge sheet we fill out where we fill out all the hooks for each client and what we want to test, the ad examples, and then give that to the creator to film. So it's definitely a process. It's taken a few years to nail down, but everyone has their role and we've been able to do it so that we can ship out new ads every week.
Yeah. And again, process geek hat on versus TikTok hat. What was the, that's such a 30, you know, you have how many people all in with script writer or with project managers, talent, editors, how many people are part of this process every week?
So 30 creators, that's like the on-screen talent. And these are mostly contractors that I'll give maybe two or three different projects to work on a week or two or three different clients. And then I have four, I just hired a new one. So I was like, which one, three or four? I have four project managers who will assign the task to the creator, make sure the footage looks good, send it to the editor, so see the project through. And then I have 10 editors, and those are all Filipino-based video editors, masters of TikTok ads, and essentially we just give them the footage, we type out the transcript of all of the voiceover lines, we essentially share with them a storyboard of start the ad here, this is the first clip we like, here's the transcript of the different lines we want to include in the ad, here's the CTA, and they know exactly what text treatments, animations we want. So they could take that storyboard and give us the final ads usually within a day or two.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at e-commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archived discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce Fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year,
We'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply, potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion.
Are there any tools you're using? I've got on my list for this next week to go through. There's some really amazing looking. I haven't test driven these yet, but video editing tools that claim to be AI equipped are probably just better versions of old tools. Particularly, I'm spacing on the name, but if you've got a big, you know, video you want to chop down, auto transcribes it. And then if you can just go in and, oh, here's a great pull quote, or here's the killer quote for this thing, you can go in and just delete everything else but that text, and it automatically edits the video automatically. So you don't have to go through and cut and scrub it with the lines. You can just do it based on text. What kind of tools are you using to make it easier for your editing team, both on the video editing side, but also on the static creative side, maybe for some of the, like, you know, Instagram or Facebook, for people that maybe aren't professional editors or professional graphic designers, but that can kind of help them quickly, you know, look better than they are, maybe is the best way to put it. What kind of tools are you using that make this job easier?
Yeah. One that comes to mind that I've just started using the last 6 months, but now we love, is called otter.ai. I think it's some, is that what you were thinking of?
That's not the one for the video editing, but I've heard of them as well. They do like the transcription. You can like have them join your Zoom call and kind of be transcribing stuff, right?
Yep. And so what we do is when we get the footage from the creators, because there's so much footage of them talking to the camera, recording different voiceovers, instead of having to type out each line for the Filipinos to edit, because them being Filipino, not perfect English, to have them listen to the video and type it out in perfect grammar is very difficult. And to be honest, a terrible use of their time. They should be editing videos. So what we'll do is we'll upload all of the video raw files of the creators to Otter AI to get the transcripts, and then include those transcripts to the Filipino editors. And that has made their job so much easier, having the written transcript for each video.
Interesting. Will it learn your language? I think the answer is yes for some of them, but for Otter, can, for example, like if we're talking and I just say B2B, most transcription apps are not going to be able to put B2B in a format that makes sense. They might do a different word. Maybe they'll write B, and like they won't write it in the correct format. But are some of these, is Otter in particular, capable of learning custom vocabulary to actually get professional looking transcriptions with some of those kind of nuanced terms and acronyms?
I've seen it be pretty good. It's a lot better than other tools that I've used in the past. Still, the project managers have to take the transcript, and there might be a few words that are off and add some periods and commas where it makes sense. So it's not perfect, but so much better use of our time than have the Filipinos have to transcribe it or to have my project managers type out every word. I think it gets them about 90% there. And then the project managers can kind of edit the 10%, but it has saved us a ton of time.
You mentioned, so anything before we move on, anything else on the creative process? So hook, get the stuff filmed, scripts for your creative talent, they go through and do it, hand it to your editors. And are your editors, are they, obviously you're moving all this footage around to different people. Are they editing all of these things like natively in TikTok, or they have a platform that they're using to do it on a desktop and then uploading it back up to TikTok?
Definitely not editing in TikTok. They're using Premiere, After Effects as their main. So if I was to create a TikTok video, I would edit it in CapCut, which is a free phone app. It's actually created by ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok. And that's the number one tool I would recommend to brands if you want to edit videos by yourself, or if you have an employee that's not a skilled video editor, but can make their way around an iPhone app. CapCut is amazing. And they also have a desktop version. So you can get pretty far with CapCut. But if you want it to look the best, I mean, we have really great production quality. I think that's what makes the Social Savannah ad stand out from other creators, is that our editing team is so great at like the perfect transitions, little zoom-ins, interesting text treatments. So I think that's almost a bit of our secret sauce, is that they are so incredibly talented in After Effects and Premiere. And they can make, even though it's a TikTok video, it really does look well produced and high quality, something that you can't achieve just editing on TikTok or just on an iPhone app. So I think for now, that's part of our secret sauce, having that really great editing quality. But if you're just getting started, CapCut can get you really far. But Premiere and After Effects will get you like that extra special lift at the end if you need it.
Yeah. What do you think for, and I use this, I'm asked this question knowing it's there's answers all over the board, but I'm going to still ask it. Average return on ad spend roughly for TikTok. And let's say for, again, what's like, what's bad, what's average, and what's fantastic that you're seeing? And let's assume that most of the ads you're running are let's say consumer products, let's say $50 to $70 price point, something in that range. What are you seeing for, because I don't do a lot of paid ads. I do almost zero paid ads. And when people would tell me on Facebook, like, hey, I'm getting like a 1.5 ROAS or 2X ROAS, like I'd be like, that sounds awful. I mean, it depends on your lifetime value and your margins and stuff. But I know that's also the world that we live in today in terms of just attention. And it depends on your model and what your goals are, for example. But is that kind of what you're seeing on TikTok for returns? Or can you get better returns than that from your experience?
I think 2X ROAS is an average. And I think that's usually the goal that clients have coming in is like a 2X or better. That's where they're profitable. So I think that's where you alluded to business model is so important. If you need a 4X ROAS on your first purchase, TikTok, any channel, it's going to be a very uphill battle for you. But the clients that can be profitable at a 2X because they have the lifetime value, upsells, whatever else in their funnel, they just need to get someone in the funnel through TikTok as that first purchase, and then they can nurture that and see the value of that over time. That's when we can really scale at a 2X. So can you get a 4X on TikTok? Of course you can, but maybe you're only spending $100 a day. I don't think that's really meaningful to these 7-8-figure brands. They want to be spending $10,000 a day. And for those brands that are spending $10,000 a day, a 2X, 3X, that's about what to expect. And that's where they're really happy. I think it's a better play if you can scale at a lower ROAS than have to be ultra efficient on the ROAS side. And then it limits your ability to scale.
Have you seen schedulers? Like, how do you think about scheduling posts? And this goes across everything, not just TikTok, but Instagram and beyond. I heard someone say today, actually in the ECF forums, that they've used schedulers in the past. And anecdotally, they didn't track this with a statistically significant experiment or anything, but they just felt like when they use schedulers for their posts and their ads, a lot of times that they didn't perform as well. Have you seen that be the case with stuff when you're setting up content or not necessarily?
That's interesting. I have not heard that, but that is interesting that's the case. Was that across multiple people or one person?
No, just one person I heard today. So that's very, I don't know if apocryphal is the right word, but it's a very small sample size. But given you work, you know, with so many more brands, I wondered if that had come across your radar at all.
No, hasn't come across yet. I have a lot of brands that do use scheduling tools to schedule out their organic social, and then others that just post on a whim. I would say maybe the ones that post on a whim aren't as polished as the ones that are scheduled. So that could just be an anecdotal reason why scheduled posts might not perform as well. Some of the brands that I work with, they just post multiple times a day with not really that much care. Probably not the right word to use, but whereas the brands that have to get everything approved by multiple teams, things are scheduled out in advance, they got to follow the content calendar. I can see why that strategy may not perform as well at getting virality as the ones that are just like, oh, I see a trend, I'm going to create a video and post it right now. So that's kind of where my mind is going. Maybe it's just about the when you have to schedule things out in advance, the content quality goes down and it's not as immediate or spontaneous.
Yeah, interesting. What about, kind of start wrapping up here, last couple of questions for you. What are the differences? You already touched on one, like for example, TikTok, you can get away with maybe being a little cheekier, a little crazier, pushing the boundaries more versus Facebook, where it's a little bit slightly different audience, different expectations. But how else are you thinking about running different ads across, you know, let's say Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok? Like how will you usually record, when you record a TikTok ad, will you disseminate it across all those other platforms with minimal editing in terms of maybe just aspect ratios, things like that? Or are you really creating from the script level for different platforms based on different kind of, you know, the different cultures in those platforms? How do you think about that?
The answer to that is both. When I'm creating TikTok specific ads for clients, my recommendation is always you need to launch these on Facebook and Instagram too. So if you're creating it for TikTok, always test it on Facebook and Instagram, because we are seeing, and you can see this when you look at a lot of brands' ads libraries that TikTok style content is working really well on Facebook and Instagram right now. So definitely something worth getting the other aspect ratios for and testing across everything. I will say we do create some ads that are specific to Facebook and Instagram, and there are a lot of differences in how we approach it to just a TikTok ad. One of the things being the text styles. It's not just going to be that TikTok bubble text that we love, more branded text, more elements in the brand, like maybe the logo we can pop in there, longer form. So like 1 to 2 minutes can work really well on Facebook. Another interesting thing we've noticed is on TikTok, the best videos are always videos that are coming from one person's point of view. Whereas on Facebook, we usually see that ads that feature multiple talents do better. So instead of one person saying like, oh, I love this makeup and do a tutorial like they would on TikTok, we have multiple people saying why they love it. And we combine it into what we call a mashup style video of multiple testimonials. So things like that are our different style or format choices that we may make if we want to do an ad specific to Facebook as opposed to TikTok.
Interesting. Well, tell people a little bit more, like the socialsavannah.com. I know I mentioned it at the very top, but give people a sense of what you do, how you can help, and who you're the best fit for.
Sure. So if you need help with your TikTok ad creatives, Facebook, Instagram, and you don't want to build out your own team of creators and editors, and you want to kind of just plug into my system and the formats and hooks that we've seen perform best, I work with clients on a month-to-month term to do ad creatives for them. So if you want to come test it out for a month, see how the ads do, would love to get in touch. So you can find me at thesocialsavannah.com. I also have a TikTok ads course that was mentioned earlier that you can find on my website, as well as a new UGC course teaching you how to create really great user-generated content videos, how to be a creator. So that one's on my website as well. And then, of course, on Twitter, you can find me at social_Savannah. And that's where I always share hooks, ads that are working well for me, and TikTok ad tips.
So totally selfish here, because I'm guessing most people aren't interested in Twitter advertising. But have you played much with video or Twitter ads at all? I feel like that's this platform that, and for good reasons, doesn't get talked about for DTC very much because it's just not the right place for it. But I've always been curious about how that would perform. Have you played around with advertisements on Twitter, either video or otherwise?
Not yet. I've seen a couple e-commerce brands tip their toe in it, and I've been eagerly listening out for feedback of if it's working. So far, I've heard mixed results, so I'm not that excited about it yet. I still think TikTok has a lot of life left in it. And of course, Meta, Facebook, Instagram isn't going away. So really focusing my efforts on that. But to the point you made in podcast earlier is that if TikTok gets banned or something happens to Facebook, the great thing is that people are always going to need video where it's shown. That's going to change over the years. Maybe it's Twitter, maybe it's YouTube Shorts, maybe LinkedIn starts blowing up or these new platforms that are coming out. So I think there'll always be a need for video advertising, but the platform it's on, it'll probably change over the years. And as I hear of other ones coming up and getting more popularity, like maybe Twitter, then I can adjust my services to that platform.
Well, I'd love to cap this off with a lightning round. So I'm sure you've heard these before, super rapid fire questions at you. So feel free to just, give me the quick and dirty on the answers. And so first question is, how do you describe the e-commerce environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
Full of opportunity.
Oh, optimistic approach. I like it. One of the fondest memories from your childhood?
I really love horseback riding. I still do equestrian, show jumping. So anything involving horses, riding horses growing up are fond memories.
My middle daughter loves horses. How old were you when you started?
I started pretty late. I started at 12 because my best friend in middle school had horses. So I would go over to her house and ride, and I've had the horse bug ever since.
Nice. As an adult, do you have horses at all? Or do you keep riding quite a bit?
Yeah. So I actually just bought my first horse a few months ago, and we're going to be doing show jumping competitions this summer.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Where do you live now? And if you weren't living there, where in the world would you live if you could live anywhere? cost, just purely based on location. Imagine your family, your friends, they all just get transported there. Cost isn't an issue. Where would be the ultimate place to live in the world?
Ooh, you know, I moved to Las Vegas 2 years ago and I really love it here. So I would say I would be where I'm at right now. I think this is such a great city to be in and really, really fits my vibe. So I would say bring my friends and family all to Vegas.
What, and I asked this as someone who moved recently from kind of the mountain, Rocky Mountain region down to Tucson. I'm wondering if the reasons are curious. What was it that drew you to Vegas?
Love the sunshine. Can't get enough of the sun. I'm sure you get plenty of that in Arizona
ding, ding,
now.
Ding. Yep.
No state income tax. So running your own business is a lot better to do in Vegas than it is in other places. And plenty to do. I've been able to get into NHL. Like we have Golden Knights here. We have UFC events. So I've been going to a few of those. So there's no shortage of entertainment options and also nature options, like going horseback riding and being out in nature is something that you can easily do here too, which a lot of people don't think when they think of Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, you can drive 20, 30 minutes from the strip and you're pretty much like out in the desert, if not the mountains, right?
Yep, pretty much. If you drive 20 minutes in any direction, you're kind of at the end of the valley. So it's really small, which I think is another reason why I like it. Easy to navigate, get around, and you can get out into the desert really easily.
What's one of your favorite brands that you have worked with? Obviously, it doesn't have to be the one. We don't want to make you pick the favorite, but one of that comes to mind, we're like, this was just a fun brand to work with in terms of either what they were up for or their product or the ads that came out of it.
You know, I don't mind saying a favorite. My favorite is BlendJet. I mentioned them earlier in the podcast, and I think they have a special place in my heart because I've been working with them for nearly 3 years now. And wow. I was the one that said, but this whole TikTok thing, let's all take a look and let's start the ads on there. And now TikTok is such a huge part of their business. So they've been so great at supporting TikTok as a channel and me, but they're pretty much down for anything. So they've been one that I've probably made over 500 ads for in the last 3 years. Like we've done so many BlendJet ads, but it doesn't get old. And we really love working with them. So shout out to BlendJet.
Nice. Hardest part of your business?
Hardest part of your business. I would say working with creators has been an interesting challenge. Some of these girls are 18 years old, just joined a sorority. And I kind of see myself as a talent scout. Like sometimes I feel like I'm looking around on TikTok and Instagram and I'll be like, oh, you'd look really good in this ad for this client. So these girls aren't necessarily models or are used to this world. Some of them are just going to school. So working with creators has been interesting. And some of them, this is their first job and their first time dealing with the boss and having deadlines and turning in things in the process. So it's been interesting working with people who are new to business, especially someone like me, where I'm like very process oriented, organized. And I have to remember that some people are just getting started. So having grace with these 18-year-olds has taught me a lot of patience. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
How much money in the bank is enough? And this is a question we always ask. It's probably the most, personally intrusive taboo topic, which is kind of interesting. Either answer one of two ways, either cash and like a liquid net worth, so cash or stocks or things in the bank that you could live off of the earnings and interest of, or an annual income where if you got that in perpetuity, you'd be fine. So point being, if you made any more, it'd be great. But if you knew this was the amount you had for the rest of your life, you'd that was all you got, you'd be okay with that too, to live a happy life.
You know, I think my husband and I, we come from pretty humble backgrounds, even just humble of a few years ago. We used to live in a 400 square foot, one bedroom apartment back in 2018. I think the rent was like $1,600 a month, but we were really happy and we didn't seem bothered that we didn't have money to go to UFC and have horses, all the fun things we have now. So everything that we do now, it's nice perks and it's extras. And it's things we would have never been able to afford in the past. But back then, we were probably living off maybe a total of $2,000 or $3,000 a month, thinking about rent and payments and food. And we were perfectly happy. We didn't see any problem with that. So I think if we had to go back to that, that would be totally fine. I would maybe just want to move out to like Arkansas or somewhere a bit cheaper than Vegas. But I think just making do with what you have and being happy is the main thing. And not needing a certain dollar amount to make you happy. You should be able to be happy no matter where you're living.
Love it. How many hours a week do you work?
What is checking my phone at midnight? Does that count as work?
Yeah. I think if you're going into your inbox and starting to reply to stuff, then yes, definitely.
Yeah, I would say my typical schedule is I like to do my horseback riding in the morning, and then I'll be home around 10:30, 11 to start diving in. And then I'll do maybe 2 or 3 hours of work on the computer, take a break, go to the gym, come back, do maybe 3 more hours of computer work. And then throughout the night, just checking emails, if there's any tasks that need to be addressed too. But I will say that's definitely hasn't been the case over the last 3 years. It's taken a long time to build the right team, the right processes to allow me to do that. If I was to answer this question, even a year or 2 years ago, it would have been like, I'm on the computer for 8 to 10 hours straight every day, where now I can finally have a bit more free time and relax now that I have the people and processes in place.
Amazing. Well, Savannah, thank you. This has been super fun to dive into TikTok, to get to know you better. So if you're listening and you'd love to connect with Savannah about having her really take over your TikTok process and help, you know, streamline that, get many more creative iterations and ads out the door, thesocialsavannah.com is her website. You can also check out there. If you want to do it yourself, she's got a fantastic course on, so you can learn all of this and then implement it yourself. So Savannah, thank you so much. This is super fun. Hope to connect in person at some point in the future. And thanks for coming on.
Same. Thanks so much.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell, and also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.